Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. I just wanted to say it because I think it's fun to say these are not your daddy's data centers. If I can put it that way. We're going to talk about that. We're going to learn a lot more about data centers. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and that's to be expected. I think not everybody is yet fully informed on the value, the importance of data centers, and also what they can bring to communities. We're going to focus on that here a little bit, but we've got other agenda items here too. Jason Small is with us in studio, former state legislator, Republican, a member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe, and now Montana's head of the AFL-CIO. Think about that for a minute as well. And Riley McCauley joins us in studio as well, and Riley is with the, got it right here. Sorry, Riley. The Western States Regional Council of Carpenters. Out of Wyoming and Montana here, works in eastern Montana. A lot of data centers in Wyoming. They're ahead of us. So we're going to learn a ton today, but also talk about how businesses and how labor can work together so both can prosper today on Voice. Hey, this will be good. Jason Small is with us, Executive Secretary of the Montana AFL-CIO, as I mentioned, too, a member of the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, former Republican state legislator. Jason, watched you work an awful lot as we did reports from the legislative session. A lot of respect to you. How you doing, sir?
Oh, not bad at all. It's good to see you here this morning. And kind of one of those nicer type days out, so...
So get to work, right?
Yeah. Carry on.
That's probably what Riley is thinking. Riley McCauley is a representative of the Western States Regional Council of Carpenters. Montana AFL-CIO is easier to say, Riley. But good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. It's a nice day out, and glad to be here.
Thank you for being here. We want to talk about data centers because there's some activity, a pushback against these data centers from the Montana Environmental Information Center. They feel, that maybe the public is not informed, but I'm worried about the public being misinformed about what data centers are and the value of them. And Jason, as an organization, they're doing MEIC is doing these public hearings, so to speak. They're a little bit slanted in my mind, and then you can read the stuff from MEIC's website as well, and their approach to data centers. But you guys were there with an informational picket,
right? So last night up at Broadview, there was a small group there, and they were handing out informational flyers and leaflets, basically, and handing them to community members, other people that were showing up. We've oftentimes, as these projects are developing and taking off, you only hear one side of the story, right? Well, we don't want to be left out of the story. There's huge benefits to these projects. There's a lot of, I don't know what you'd want to call it, shock and terror involved with the how some of these groups go about trying to basically stop the projects or downplay them. But we felt it was our right and something we needed to do. And we went up and put out informational leaflets, talked to people, kind of set the story straight that, workers are interested in these types of things. These aren't bad for communities. There's an opportunity here to improve basically everybody's life. So
let's talk about what those objections are and where we feel like the truth is, and then perhaps where we get off course from that. And Riley McCauley, again, Western States Carpenters, Regional Council of Carpenters, I should say, representative. Wyoming is kind of ahead of the country a little bit in terms of data centers. Why don't you start with what you're hearing is misinformation about data centers, and then what you know is true to this point.
So we built quite a few data centers in the Cheyenne area. So from what I've seen so far, just between MEIC's information and the information that we're actually visually watching on site on the facilities in Wyoming, we talk about water, right? Water is always a common topic, especially in the Broadview area where you've got a lot of alkali beds and you don't have a good source of water. A lot of these facilities are drilling down into aquifers that are below the bedrock that are not affecting the everyday person's wells. They're pulling water out of there into what's called a semi-closed loop system. There's some evaporative cooling that happens in there. So they use some makeup water on average. So you can take a look at a project called Tallgrass Caruso, right? It's using three households worth of water for makeup a year.
What?
Apartment complexes use more water than that in a year, and we build hundreds of them here in Billings.
Well, I guess I'm being led to understand that water is going to be in short supply if we complete our plans for data centers across the West.
So they talk about the short supply, a little bit of its fear, right? It's the unknown because they don't know exactly what's happening on those sites. They don't understand the makeups of the facilities. There's also what's called a completely closed loop system, which uses a glycol system. So they cool it with glycol. It doesn't use water. Glycol's like antifreeze that's inside your car, right? So they cool it with that kind of a system, or they use that semi-closed loop where it uses an average of three households worth of water a year. And that's on a 1.8 gigawatts facility. So that's actually bigger than the facility that's going to be built up in Broadview.
Gotcha. I'm going to peel into this a little deeper as well. So water in the old days, I mean, there was some validity to some of that criticism, right?
There was, yeah. You can take a look at some old data centers or what the old technology was back in the day. Where they didn't have necessarily closed loop systems, or they were pumping it out of a river and back into it. There are instances where that was the case back in the day. That may be something they're doing in foreign countries where they don't have the guidelines that we do here in the U.S. But those are not technologies that are getting utilized this day and age. We've evolved. Things have changed. The data centers that we're building do not at all use any of that. Cheyenne, Wyoming, for example, they don't have the water either. That we, you know, just like Montana, there's not an abundant source of water. So they're drilling deep wells that are down below the bedrock. They're cooling the water that's coming out of there. And whether they have to treat that water or not, sometimes they may have to do that. But they're actually taking care of the water resources that they're utilizing.
And these data centers, they're large. I understand it can take up to 1,500 or so construction jobs, 18 months to 2 years. And then there's 100-plus permanent jobs that are associated with that. Jason Small, Executive Secretary, Montana AFL-CIO, what are your members saying? What's the promise or the hope or Montana is attracting business in a lot of ways, and data centers are at the top of the list. What are your members saying?
Well, you know, there's always a diverse crowd, right? And if you're looking towards the building trade side, this could be the bread and butter until some of the other projects 3, 4, 5 years down the road pop up, Sentinel or whatnot and what have you. So, it wouldn't be fair to take it off the table before you're even able to have an actual conversation, right? I mean, like I was saying earlier, the shock and awe and the scare tactics, of course, it alters the public perception and makes it more difficult to actually do these projects. But on the other hand, if we're using what best practices are for today, we're not going with total open loop systems, and we're actually taking care of business. We make sure these projects are built that way. It's kind of one of those low harm type situations. I mean, we're going to be using way less water than somebody running a center pivot or, growing alfalfa in the summer. So that it's not that big an ask. So the membership themselves, for the most part, on the building trade side, everybody's kind of for it because we need these projects. We need to, it helps with the tax base, right? So you got a benefit there. You have these high-paying jobs, many of them, and I'm sure Riley will talk about it here after a bit, but we have to differentiate between what the pay scale is in data centers or crypto farms. It's pretty substantial.
Yeah.
The work involved. Yeah, so, I'm looking at the numbers kind of right now. We're looking at a crypto center here, and people are making $20 to $23 an hour and plus benefits. And then we go over to, say, Oracle's data center, and the ranges are like $32.84 an hour to nearly $68 an hour. So,
wow.
Substantial. That's a heck of a lot of opportunity to an area where jobs are scarce and opportunity scarce.
Yeah, good paying jobs. And then the number of them surprises me in terms of the construction of it as well. Riley McCauley again with us here, Western States Regional Council of Carpenters. Riley, are there any variances then? So Have they solved the water issues? And is every data center going forward going to be able to say, hey, we only use 3 apartment houses of water a month or whatever it is?
So I can't.
And repeat that again. I don't want to be wrong about that either. Yeah.
So I can't necessarily say that the problem is solved, right?
Yeah.
I know that they're putting guardrails on. The legislators, the local communities, they're putting the ask out there to, hey, use closed loop systems. The Laramie County Commissioners down in Wyoming, they're encouraging the use of a closed loop system. That's what they want them to use on those facilities. They don't want to see them utilizing all their water resources that they have. And so, yeah, when you talk about it, you're talking about a 3 household makeup, right? So what an average household uses for water a year times 3 is what the makeup water is in a semi-evaporative closed loop system.
For a year.
For a year. Okay. Yes, sir.
Give us some more of this. I mean, I like the stats and the data about these data centers. Yeah.
So we talked about wages, right? Wages and benefits. Our goal is labor. Me being a business rep for the Western States Regional Council of Carpenters, we want to see community wealth. We want to see the benefit for the community, right? We don't want to see somebody come in out of Texas or wherever paying $18, $15 an hour somewhere in that ballpark. We want to see good community-paying jobs that are going to help benefit our community. We want to see the parameters that keep people from living on the government systems, right? We don't want to see them having to live on welfare and the different systems. We want them to be able to obtain good quality work and have a career path and then also be able to get good benefits for their family. So us ourselves as the carpenters, our journeymen are making $32.05 an hour, plus they're getting full family medical at no cost to their family and a retirement. And as a building trades, because I'm also the vice president of the Eastern Montana Building Trades Council and the statewide, all of our trades are paying a benefits package as well. The employers pay those benefits for the membership. And so when you're talking about building community wealth, that's keeping your tax base inside of your community by putting local people to work and keeping that recirculating inside our communities. And so a small town like Broadview, who hasn't seen good job opportunities in years, this is a huge opportunity for them. It's a huge opportunity for Yellowstone County and the growth of our county as well.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate looking at every angle here as well, because, yes, there is opportunity, but that's not the only piece of the puzzle. There's probably some cost in, you know, as we talk about water, power. Power is another one. We'll pick up on that when we come on back, because I'm hearing a lot of things about power, and a lot of these companies are saying, we will BYOP, we will bring our own power. I wonder how feasible that is over the long run as well. And then, you know, we had Quantica on the air, and they had talked about, you know, the model when expanded actually brings more power to the system. Get on to power here in just a little bit as we're talking with Riley McCauley, Western States Regional Council of Carpenters, and the new head, relatively. How long have you been on the job, Jason?
Yeah, it's been a few years.
Been
now.
A few years now. Gosh, time just flies. Then I can't believe it. Head of the Montana AFL CIO, as we're talking about data centers, but you know, also labor working across the aisle. And I think, Jason, that's kind of what you represent. And you know, you are a journeyman boilermaker. You've got the experience with labor. Elected as a Republican representative, Senate District 21, served a couple of terms there. You know, as the head of the Montana AFL CIO, I think that represents labor working across the aisles in certain ways, in new ways. You know, go into that a little bit.
Well, you know, it does frequently. And the AFL-CIO is a rather large organization. It's a conglomeration of quite a few unions. I mean, there's 38 unions, plus probably a couple more. We may be up to about 40 now. There's approximately 500 locals and somewhere around 50,000 people that we represent. So, you know, that's a very large group, right? So one of the things that we do is, well, we strive to help worker safety, worker health, and improve quality of life for people. And we do that by watching legislation, helping write legislation often. We sometimes help with city and county issues. We kind of get involved all over the place, wherever we can make a difference. One of the other things we do with some frequency is oftentimes we're kind of a liaison between business and labor itself. Obviously, every local or every union has its own political agenda to an extent, but we try to kind of solidify that, build consensus, and try to do what's right for everybody. And sometimes that involves talking to businesses, which obviously we need. I mean, nobody's going to work if we don't have business. It's kind of one of them funny things in life. I'm not sure I've ever drawn a paycheck from anybody that had less money than me. So that's just how it works.
Yeah. I appreciate that, too. And we're going to get into that a little bit because, that's sort of not only that's like kind of like knocking a door down at times, too, to try to get some movement in some of these directions. Riley McCauley with us as well. And maybe you can share that as well, too. You're ahead of a couple of different labor organizations based out of eastern Montana and Wyoming as well. Maybe share your sense of that, too, how labor unions are working across aisles more so. And there are a lot of horror stories if we go back and talk about how business and labor didn't get along there was a cost to that, so to speak. I credit, the 8-hour workday, child labor laws, women's suffrage as well. There's been a lot of support for good ideals from the unions as well. So maybe it's just an evolution of sorts.
So, you talk about working across the aisle and working with both sides, right? So as the Carpenters, the Western States Regional Council of Carpenters, our view is, we have to work with everybody. We can't leave any rock unturned, per se, right? So whether that's working with a Republican or a Democrat, working across the aisle, we have to be able to work with everybody. Because in order to get things done in the state of Montana, you have to work with both sides to accomplish our goals. And so you talk about how labor is working with businesses, right? So we're getting into these meetings, having conversations about labor shortages and building workforce for Montana. That's a huge goal. The lack of workforce nationwide is a problem everywhere. Montana is not shy of that either. We have the lack here as well. So you talk about working with businesses to bolster apprenticeships and build apprenticeships across the state of Montana. How do we do that? Through projects like data centers, through projects like the St. Vincent's Hospital. So you utilize those bigger projects to help grow your workforce for Montana so that in the long run, we have an opportunity to have a good skilled labor workforce in the state. Right now, we've got the boomer generation that's retiring. The Gen Xers are there's a gap in there, right, of about a 15-year gap. And so you're trying to fill that gap by training the younger generations into the workforce and growing labor through that avenue of apprenticeships, right? And that also comes at a cost, right? Good quality paying jobs, benefits, helping those younger families get a good start.
And I appreciate that. Growing labor is a concept I don't necessarily think. We think about training, but to grow that labor force. And there's been a lot of movement in that regard with the chamber, with what the governor has done too. And so it's good to see that. There's certainly recognition of that. It's not just training. It's also growing those numbers too. Very, very good. Riley, let's go into this. This BYOP, bring your own power. I love the concept. I think it's necessary. The MEIC has, and it's fair, to talk about what is necessary to protect ratepayers and communities and in the environment as well. Those things belong in this overall discussion, but facts about them belong, not just fears. Bring your own powers. What are we talking about here? Is that doable?
Yeah, so that's a concept that a lot of data centers are starting to take on. You're starting to see data centers incorporated with either natural gas power plants, solar and wind farms to help with the load share and the load capacity that those data centers are utilizing. So when we look at power across Montana, a lot of people think of Colstrip. They think of Yellowstone Generation that was built a few years ago. They don't look at the data center side of it where data centers are trying to do the same thing. So there's conversation of natural gas peaker plants, just like Yellowstone Generation. There's conversation of we'll just take this facility in Broadview at what it is. They're looking at 250 megawatts of wind and 750 megawatts of solar to help make up some of that 1,000 megawatts of power that they purchased from Northwestern Energy and help increase the power that's on the line.
Is that a lot? Do you think that companies can actually produce successfully 100 or 1,000 megawatts of power like that regularly, consistently?
So I think they can do it consistently, but it takes a It's going to take multiple avenues, right? You're not just going to be able to take just wind and solar and have that consistency. You're going to have some battery storage. They're probably going to be looking at the natural gas facility or something in that nature to help create that consistent line energy. So,
and so that's where all those job numbers come from. Is yep. There's a lot of different aspects in all of this. We don't have necessarily a grid that can handle moving, if there's additional power there, moving that to a usable source may be an issue. I guess what I'm getting at is some of the technical side of this in terms of producing their own power. Will it be regulated? And then, you know, let's talk about those contingencies, which may affect the average ratepayer.
So I don't know what it looks like from a regulatory standpoint as far as how they're going to control the power that's being produced on that site necessarily. But Jason might be able to speak a little bit to the ratepayer side and the what that can do for a ratepayer, right?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, really. You know, energy scarcity, what we're dealing with right now, that's what causes spikes and increases in prices to the consumers. And, you know, one way to get around that is obviously by creating a surplus. And that's what we'll be looking at if every one of these data centers starts putting in their own power sources. And let's say they're offline or it's a slow time or something like that. All of a sudden you have an overabundance and a drop in price. So at the end of the day, when they knock down units 1 and 2, Colstrip and Correct plant, I think anybody that's been paying an electricity bill for the past 15 years can probably look at that and figure out what was going on. I mean, we're on a constant rise. And it's expensive to build new power. And the governor was, you know, he's been looking ahead. He's put together some committees to try to find solutions to not cause a rate increase to the taxpayers as we're bringing these businesses in. And there's talks of this and that, and one of Northwestern's bigger deals is they're trying to work out the ability to apply a large load tariff to high power usage people to offset the cost so that you or I or common people aren't paying increased prices as these continue on.
Thank you for that. And it's not pie in the sky then, Riley?
No, it's not pie in the sky at all. You know, there's a good opportunity to build new energy through these data centers to help create more load on our transmission lines here in Montana.
Appreciate that. I've only got like about 30 seconds left here. So, Bill, stand by. We'll talk about how nuclear. He wants to ask that question. Okay. Let's see. 30 seconds or less. Is nuclear going to be a part of this?
So I can't say that nuclear is going to be a part of this data center as a whole, right? The conversation hasn't been had about nuclear on this site. But nuclear is a topic of conversation when it comes to data centers. There's been articles that have come out about Meta or Facebook and utilizing nuclear. So nuclear is an option.
Working families, they are our economy, especially here in Montana. And we want to keep families working. Data centers have some promise here for the state of Montana. In terms of, well, power is going to be an issue. We'll talk about that here. That's still on the plate. That's wherever you go in that regard. But think about the benefits to data centers. And also think about the consequences. If we pull back on this push to get more energy, to do more data centers, we're going to fall seriously behind in terms of competition with the rest of the world. And you know, we don't have to let that happen. Welcome back here. Second half, it's from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Jason Small is with us, the executive secretary of the Montana AFL-CIO, and Riley McCauley with the Western States Regional Council of Carpenters, a representative there, and also represents the other unions. Fresh off of an informational picket from Broadview, there's a data center proposal there. We've talked about that with Northwestern Energy and Quantica. They were on the program. Go back to the podcast page. It was actually a really good informational program there. But that was an informational picket to make sure that all the facts are out there. And the thing about it, too, is this being these public hearings by the Montana Environmental Information Center, MEIC, they are not necessarily open to public comment. And so, I don't know, you can read into that yourself. Let's get back to the topic here of energy. And I know Skip in Hamilton, listening on KLYQ, has got a question regarding that. So, Skip, good morning. Good to hear from you. You're on the air here with Jason Small and Riley McCauley.
Hey, thank you, Tom. And thank you, gentlemen, for coming on today. I can tell you how what I believe is really, I'll say, wonderful union backgrounds in your trades. And I've never met Jason, but I've watched you over the years, as a senator in our legislature. And, I can tell that you know what happens in our legislative sessions. And so I'm going to ask, is there anything, because we have this whole year ahead of us, to make sure that we get the T's crossed and the I's dotted about this subject that you're talking about right now? Is there anything legislatively that can constructively be done to make sure there's a smooth transition with data centers and all kinds of data mining that requires an awful lot of power, so that the ratepayers of Northwest Energy, for instance, the ratepayers that exist, are not taking the burden on for the infrastructure that's needed for these data centers, and so that it's done fairly, and that the jobs that they create, I think, require the kinds of contractors that are very good at what they do, which is usually a union contractor for almost every trade. And so I hope that you can bring something together that's really good for the state. So I'll leave it at that. Just can legislation be done, sir, that's going to help us out in the future?
Thanks, Skip. I appreciate that. And Jason, I'm just going to add, you know, maybe there's big apples and maybe there's small apples to pull down for, you know, legislative. But creating a legislative, a policy path for good, solid regulation that does protect ratepayers but also encourages business.
Right. So first things first, I'll address the fact that the government has appointed a working group as of now that is in the off season, non-legislative season. They are looking for pathways to do exactly what you said, to make sure that the ratepayers themselves don't get hit with the cost of construction on these projects, and to hopefully in the end, of course, create some form of surplus that will drop electrical prices. So legislatively, we have many committees, of course, in state. There's ETIC, the energy committees that run in the interim. There's energy committees during session. And these have also been a topic for them since the end of last session. So they're proactively working on legislation. And I'm not privy to any one thing in particular at the moment, but I assure you, there'll be a whole host of legislation brought addressing the situation itself, and at which time, you know, you'll be able to mix and match, commingle, and put something together that will effectively work for the public.
Yeah, it takes a couple of years as well, because there may be a good idea that just doesn't have momentum, you know. So that's the policy. It doesn't get created overnight. It does take a lot of years over time.
Oh, very much so. You know, the Rome wasn't built in a day is the old adage, right? Well, oftentimes you get a group of people together and you don't think of everything the first go around, and obviously problems or something will pop up out of the blue that needs to be addressed, but everybody tries to do the best they can. So there's enough of these projects throughout the United States right now that we're not stepping into a dark room. There's already ideas and concepts and processes out there that'll help.
Riley, and this is where there's got to be a legislative path for nuclear in Montana, because we have a constitutional amendment, regarding that, right? So, maybe go into that a little bit, but give us more information on nuclear, because, you know, the small nuclear reactors that we have been talking about an awful lot, that have a lot of promise for a lot of things, we think they've been around only for a short time, but that's not the case.
Yeah, so I mean, SMR, small modular reactors, have been around since the 1950s. They've been in our naval fleets, propelling our submarines.
And you're a veteran. Thank you for your service. You would know this. Thank you. Yeah.
And so they've been around a long time. The concept of some of the new concepts that they're coming out with the sodium cooled facilities such as Kemmer or the Terra Power job out of Kemmer, Wyoming. That's roughly a 500 megawatt facility at peak capacity. Their average is going to run about 345 megawatts. That facility sodium cooled. It's currently started. We started the training facility on that project. I think it was late August. And we're just wrapping up with the training facility. They'll be going into actually start on the concrete foundation phase probably in our first quarter of this year. So first to second quarter of this year. And so nuclear is a big conversation, right? It's not new technology. They're going to be advancing that technology like everything, just like data centers. There's an advanced technology inside of data centers and an evolution that happens on everything. And so when we're talking nuclear, it's been around a long time. Some of the conversations are out there that this is new technology. It's brand new. It's something that we don't have. I've never seen one. Well, part of the problem of why nobody's ever seen one is because they don't have the nuclear background to be able to go into a facility of that security and be able to go walk that site, right? And so they are there. Idaho National Labs, they build them. They're in our Navy fleets. We're building one out of Kemmer, Wyoming. There's conversations of 10 other ones across the U.S. that are going to happen. And so that helps build our transmission load. It helps build our power. It's getting us to a sustainable spot with energy to be able to hopefully lower our rates in the long run.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, maybe you guys can comment on that. I've always felt that our energy policy has to be in all of the above, because if we have affordable energy, we can go ahead and make mistakes in other areas. Our economy is much more resilient if we've got cheaper power. I'm gonna switch a little bit here. You know, this is the focus on data centers, but there's other projects out there, you know, that demand some of our attention as well. And Jason, I'm gonna just kind of start with you. You know, took over as the head of the Montana AFL-CIO. Although I got a joke, Jason's a big guy, right? He could play for the Montana NFL-CIO, which I think is really funny. Anyway, so Jason, as you took over this job, right? There was, you're a Republican state legislator, and you know, journeyman boilermaker, member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe. Very non-traditional, I think, for the head of the AFL-CIO. How has that transition been? What was your thought going into it? And now, where are you at, a year plus?
Well, you know, that's pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of life is about stepping out and taking opportunities when they arrive. And, of course, I've been in the unions. This is my 29th year in union labor right now. Mm-hmm. Week I turned 18 years old, I got a book as a laborer, and I've been involved ever since. And I started out just like anybody else. I was an apprentice. I worked my way through apprenticeships. I become a journeyman. I've run jobs. I've done the whole gamut in my field. And I was president of the local. As a matter of fact, I was even the president of the Boilermaker local when I was first elected into the legislature. Mm-hmm. So there's been a whole series of kind of strange one-off events there that's culminated in this, I guess, at this point. But it was probably a little bit shocking to a lot of people. Of course, I've got a labor background. I'm pro-labor. Everything I've done has been about helping people, basically, and giving everybody a hand up, you know. So nationally, it was kind of interesting. My first foray out after I took this position, and we're back on, you know, D.C. area, and there were a lot of people that had heard about it, and it turned a lot of heads. It was kind of shocking for some, but it makes sense in an area like this. I mean, our memberships are split. It's not 1960s, not 1970s anymore. You know, not everybody involved in labor is a Democrat, and it is quite possible, and we've seen it time and time again, there are labor-friendly Republicans out there. And the AFL, the intent of the AFL-CIO is we operate in a nonpartisan environment, and we try to maintain that. So as things progress towards election season, you know, we back the right people on both sides of the aisle. And that's what matters to us.
Yeah. And that's another aspect of it, too, is how political it is. And I mean, I think that's out of necessity in a lot of ways. But when you're just advocating for jobs in communities, it kind of breaks down those stereotypes, Riley.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you're trying to protect people's jobs, their wages and their benefits. Right. So you're trying to protect the working person and make sure that they have a good quality job to go to, that it's safe, that it's that they're getting good training, that they're getting good benefits. You want them to have equitable employment and a career path. And so, you know, you talk about having to work with both sides of the aisle. That's why. That's why we're politically involved. That's why we're working through those processes, right, is to protect the working person and to create better jobs, better wages, and better benefits.
Yes, public safety and good wages. That's, everybody is really on board with that. Well, you look at data centers, there's a lot of positives here. We shared some of that, 1,500-plus jobs in construction. That maybe is up to 2 years' time, 150 permanent jobs operating the structure. There's additional ancillary jobs in the community. Frontier Institute has done a good job of and they do a good job of getting their facts straight and a lot of things. And they've got a lot of information about data centers. It's really detailed, so I would go into that. They talk about Loudoun County, Virginia, which generated $890 million in annual tax revenue from multiple data centers. That's in 2024. Riley McCauley with us here does a lot of work in Wyoming. The Cheyenne the data centers there put $85 million back into infrastructure and public services. That's outside of tax revenue there as well. So, I mean, you want to think about why our property taxes are high. You know, we could attract more businesses in Montana. We see the numbers there. That's quite impactful. I'll go with any final thoughts here. We just got a couple of minutes. Jason Small with us again. It's good to have you in studio, Jason. Congratulations. I've admired you as a legislator and, you know, I appreciate what you're doing already. Like you say, you just care about people. Any final thoughts on this as Executive Secretary of the Montana AFL-CIO?
Well, it kind of all boils down to this, I guess. You know, we don't want to write these projects off. They're an opportunity. And local jobs, you know, we're going to save them for local people. So we want to put everybody to work. Everybody has concerns in this state. We know that we are a great exporter of our children here. And if we don't continue on and carry on and create industry and opportunities, we'll continue to export our kids. But we have to take these opportunities like this and utilize them because that's the shot they get, you know?
Yeah.
It's the difference between having your kids move out of state to go to work or being able to keep them around.
There's hardly a grander opportunity either, Riley, to, you know, data centers. We need them, and they're coming no matter, you know, what, whether we have them here or somewhere else, we can manage them. Montana does a good job, and the West, I would say the Inland West does a good job of trying to balance things here. What's final thoughts from you, sir?
You know, you look at the aspects of the job creation of this. It creates 1,600 construction jobs. Out of that 1,600, you'll probably have some people that decide that they want to call Billings home or they want to call Broadview home. There's 250 permanent jobs that are possible to be created inside these facilities. This is just using an example from one that's being built in Cheyenne right now. And so that creates equity in our county. There's not many employers that can say they employ 250 people in Billings, Montana, or in Broadview, Montana, for that matter. And so to be able to have that equitable employment and create those good jobs, that's going to be important. So just support the jobs, support the wages, and support the benefits.
Yeah, and really there's only one way. If you're clear about your vision, there's really only one way you're going to end up, and that is I think you've got to find a way to build data centers and compete with the rest of the world. I mean, we haven't even talked about AI. You know, that's energy is going to be a key to that as well. We'll talk more about it. Jason Small, congratulations. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate that.
Oh, appreciate it. You forgot one thing. Support the workers.
Support the workers. And Riley, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.